Good day, and welcome to the Barratt Developments analyst call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Mark Clarke. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Today, as you know, we're announcing our trading update for the 19 weeks to the 10th of May, and as usual, David is with me. Overall, we've seen a good, strong performance, and we're well on track to deliver another significant step up in our financial results for FY15. Market conditions have remained positive throughout the period and right across the country, with no discernible general election effect. This strong demand is being underpinned by continuing improvements in the availability and pricing of mortgages and, of course, new site openings. As a result, net private reservations per week increased to 289 per week during the period, equivalent to 0.74 sales per week on an active site basis. And we are pleased with the blend of pricing and sales rates that we're achieving. During the period, we launched 64 new developments and are currently operating from 404 active sites, including JVs, up from 362 at the same point last year. Given the strength of our sales rate, we have sold through some sites a little quicker than anticipated. We are encouraged by our progress in getting new sites through planning and into production. The sales response to these new developments has been very encouraging, and of course these sites also deliver returns that are significantly higher than our old land. This strong sales environment has enabled us to drive a higher level of sales from our legacy, lower margin sites than previously forecast. As a result, we're now expecting completions for FY15 to be slightly higher at around 15,250 excluding JVs. The benefit to profit in the year from these incremental units will be around £4 million. JVs also perform well with strong reservations across a number of sites, including Enderby Wharf in Greenwich and Brooklands, our 2,000-unit scheme in Milton Keynes. Overall, we expect to see completions, including JVs for the year, up around 9% to 16,100 units. And we expect to deliver further volume growth again next year, driven by increased site numbers. With the strength of the market, we've been able to continue to build our forward sales position, and forward sales at the 10th of May are up 17.9% at £2.6 billion. This is the highest level the group has ever achieved. We will start the new financial year with around 25% forward sold on private completions, which is about target for private sales, given production lead times and, of course, the time frames on mortgage offers. Turning to land, we have been encouraged by the continuing level of highly attractive investment opportunities that are available and which we are securing. These continue to meet or exceed our hurdle rates, and we expect to approve a total of around 16,000 plots in the full year, with 13,900 secured in the year to date. In addition, we have made excellent progress on new strategic land and have secured almost 10,000 plots in the year to date. To drive a higher return on capital, we are continuing to seek to defer land payments where possible and expect land creditors to be in line with our target of around 35% of the owned land bank as at the 30th of June. Whilst we've seen a slowing down of the planning process in the lead up to the election, we had anticipated this and have already secured either full or outline consent for all of our expected FY16 completions. We are also in a good position on planning for FY17. On net debt, we continue to expect to have a net cash position of between 50 and 100 million as at the 30th of June. So turning to outlook, the market remains strong and we expect to enter the new financial year with a strong forward order book. We've succeeded in delivering controlled volume growth and will continue to aim to do so as a result of the new outlets coming on stream. Operationally, the business is in good shape. We're delivering a quality product backed by high service standards, maintaining our five-star status for the sixth consecutive year. And that is continuing to help underpin our pricing growth. In terms of housing policy, with the election now behind us, we anticipate a supportive environment in terms of a continuation of the Help to Buy scheme and further improvements to the planning system. The new government has identified increasing housing numbers as an important priority area, and we're committed to playing our full part. We look forward to working with the new government to deliver this important objective, which will need to be supported through further releases of public sector land and continued pressure on local authorities to deliver their local plans. With a supportive economic and political environment, we can continue our land investment strategy with confidence. We're firmly on track to deliver our FY17 targets of a gross margin of at least 20% and a return on capital employed of at least 25%. So I'll hand back to the operator to take your questions, but before I do that, just to recognise this is the last time I will be hosting one of these calls as Chief Executive, so I won't be offended if you leave all the difficult questions to July, because I'm sure David will be very happy to take them then. So back over to the operator for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And we will take our first question from Aynsley Lammin in Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Morning. Just two from me. First of all, just wondered if you could give a bit of guidance in terms of the kind of June 16 volume growth. You said you sold through some of the sites a bit quicker. Just wonder what your visibility is, the site numbers, as you look out for the next 12 months. And secondly, you mentioned some improvements you'd expect in the planning post the election. Just wondered if you could give a bit more detail on what type of improvements you expect there. Thanks.
Okay, I mean, I'll kick off on the on where we would expect planning for position to go, and David can talk about June 16 if he wishes to, but my expectation is he'll probably want to wait till September, to be honest. I think the key thing on volumes is it's all about outlet numbers, and the good news is you can see, you know, quite a strong step up in outlet numbers from last year. But to say, if David wants to say any more, he can. So on planning, I mean, we've already got quite a lot of momentum building, of course, from the coalition, and I think that will be converted quite nicely through the Conservative government we now have. They had done a lot behind the scenes to try and reduce the bureaucracy of the planning system, to try and make sure that timescales were met by local authorities, by statutory bodies who we required to consult with. And we would expect to see the benefits of that coming through. I think, you know, none of us want to see a wholesale change to the planning system. What we want to see is a planning system which works more quickly. I think the other big thing that we will be pushing for as we talk to the politicians is really about resourcing in the planning departments, because I think that's one of the key issues we have. We've shortened our own timescales in terms of the planning process, but unfortunately we've seen timescales go out in planning departments because of the resourcing pressures. I think the other things that we are expecting from a new government is a real focus on public sector land again, really driving that. And of course the last part of their, you know, one of their manifesto items was starter homes. So again, something that we will certainly be working with quite quickly to understand what they're trying to achieve, and then ensure that whatever's put in place will deliver those objectives. So really a continuation of what we've seen to date, but hopefully with a clear majority, the real opportunity to drive some of these things harder. David, on June 16th?
Yeah, sure. Morning, Ainsley. Yeah, just to say that, I mean, in terms of volume, I mean, we've talked over the last probably 12 months about controlled volume growth, and I think we've sort of characterised that as growth at perhaps 3-5%. I don't think there's anything that we're saying this morning that would change our view in terms of FY16 volumes. So bear in mind that we're saying, you know, around 150 extra units coming from joint ventures, and clearly that's, you know, a limited number of projects. And then we're saying 250 units coming from legacy sites, where by definition those sites are coming towards an end, so it doesn't necessarily have a knock-on effect in relation to FY16. So I think when you look at the numbers in the market for FY16, you know, they were prior to this morning consistent with that kind of 3-5% growth.
Great, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chris Millington in Numis. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Just a few, probably two quite quick ones and one slightly higher level one. I was just wondering, David, just on the legacy sites you referred to then, just what's remaining at the end of 2015 to run off subsequently. The second one is that there's just obviously been a call from one of your competitors where labour costs featured quite heavily on the call. Just wondering kind of what you're seeing there, you know, absolute levels but also regionally. And then the slightly higher level question I had was just really, you know, in light of the Conservative majority and you know, you, Mark, your comments there on the planning environment, I'm just wondering if you've got any sort of change in view about what is the right level of volume for the group.
Do you want to start with legacy sites?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Kristen, we published some information in February saying that, you know, the legacy land and work in progress on the balance sheet was around £650 million. And on top of that, we then had legacy assets in terms of shared equity and the commercial assets, which in total got us up to about £850 million. And we said that the runoff would be about £200 million per annum. So I think we published back in September last year the sort of cylinders in terms of how we would see completion volumes run off. And, you know, completion volumes from legacy land are stepping down to somewhere between 5 and 10% for FY17. So I think it is a fairly quick runoff, but there will still be a tail of sites there through 16 and 17. I mean, if I maybe just cover labour costs.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, in terms of labour costs, I mean, I think the situation on labour has been well documented. So we said in February, and we're still in the same position, that we think that there is less upward pressure. I mean, there is clearly still upward pressure on labour costs, but it is not as acute as the pressure that we saw during calendar 14. The labour pressures were particularly pronounced around bricklayers, and I think as the rate of volume growth for the industry has slowed, so volume still rising but at a slower rate, that has taken some pressure off. And I think secondly, the larger house builders in particular, providing a more even distribution of completion volumes during the course of the year is helping to take pressure off in terms of bricklayers' rates. We said in terms of overall cost inflation that perhaps around 3 or 4% through to June 15, which was pretty consistent with what we'd said back in September. And that is clearly being driven predominantly by labour, so there is more pressure on labour than there is on materials, i.e. the labour increases are clearly at 5% or a bit above, and materials are below 3%.
I mean, I think labour is going to continue to be, I think, a challenge if the industry continues to grow at the pace it is. If you just look at the number of trades we're going to need over the next 5 years as an industry, you'd have to say that that's going to continue to put pressure on labour cost. I mean, I think the industry has got its act together in terms of training. You know, there is large-scale training going on. We've certainly moved an awful lot of our sites to using some sort of off-site manufacturer, a lot more timber frame, a lot more panelised solutions, smart roofs, etc. So trying to take some of the labour off. And I think David's point on balancing production, that makes an enormous difference. You know, if you want 100 bricklayers in June, or you have 8 per month, then clearly one is far more efficient than the other, and I think we've made some big inroads into sort of managing that production profile. I mean, just on the sort of political situation and size of the group, I mean, I don't think we're really, we've really linked the two. We've always looked at what is the optimum size of the group in terms of the efficiency we can get from the existing divisional structure, and so nothing's particularly changed there. I think, you know, the whole issue in the future is going to be about supply side rather than demand side, and I think that's where you come back to things like skills, size of land bank and such like, but I don't think it really changes our view. As I've said before, the opportunity to deliver more probably come through the sort of things we've started to talk about, which is really driving the efficiency of production, getting that more streamlined, and really looking at the processes in the business, simplifying them where we can. And I think that potentially gives you some opportunity. But I don't think the political situation is changing our view on, you know, what ultimate capacity or output should be from the group.
Got you. Very helpful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gregor Kuglitsch in UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Gregor.
I've got a few questions on the joint ventures, perhaps first. Can you give us a sense, obviously guiding up volumes there, at the same time your order books looks quite high, I think at north of £500 million in terms of value there. So can we get a sense where that the direction of travel is there in terms of perhaps whatever way you prefer to guide volumes or on the earnings level, perhaps in a sort of 1 or 2 year view? And then the second question is with regards to your midterm, I think 2017 guidance, 20% gross margin and 25% return on capital. I think look at consensus, I think most people are either there for close to it in 15 or perhaps pretty much there in 16. Can we get an update perhaps what your thinking is, David? I appreciate it. Perhaps not the right forum for this, but is it likely that you will be giving us a revised sort of midterm outlook in September with your full years?
Okay. David, do you want to start on JVs?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of joint ventures, Gregor, as you know, we've published the sort of delivery profile for joint ventures, and there is no doubt that FY16 and FY17 is quite a busy year in terms of the delivery profile for joint ventures. So we would give some specific profit guidance for FY16 in September, but we would expect that the profit guidance would certainly be at or slightly above the level for the current year, where we're saying 45 million of joint venture profits in the current year. In terms of the targets, I mean, we published the targets last year for June 17, and when Mark outlined the targets, we said that we will have another look at the targets as we come through to September 15. And, you know, that would be all the targets in terms of looking at gross margin, return on capital employed, and where the business is going from a cash return perspective. So I think that's just in line with what Mark has previously outlined, that we'll look at that again for September.
I mean, I think what we've said before is, you know, our job is to try and get there as fast as we can. I don't think that's changing, to be honest. I very much doubt we're going to be issuing new targets so quickly. I think we've just got to focus on delivering those targets we've set as quickly as we can. Well, David's got to focus on delivering those targets as quickly as we can, just to get that quite right. I'm sure he will.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Colin Sheridan in Davy. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gents. Just a few, if I may. Firstly, I know you speak in the release about continuing underlying house price inflation. I wonder if you'd be able to give us any colour on whether you've seen much of a change geographically, if there's any parts that are particularly hot or not. Secondly, then, just in relation to your comments about an improving mortgage market, I wonder if you just consider giving a bit more colour in terms of the cost of mortgages, and have you seen any movement there as opposed to simply the availability? And then finally, on land, you continue to talk about buying land above your margins. I wonder, recently, have you seen any, in terms of competition, have you seen any change in the kind of acquisition margins you'd be doing on acquisition? Thanks.
Okay. I mean, in terms of house price inflation, I don't think we're giving any more guidance at this time. Obviously, we'll provide an update with the full year numbers. But I think you can sense from the statement that with strong sales rates, you know, it's continuing to provide the opportunity to get the best value for the houses that we're selling. So, I mean, we certainly see momentum continuing, but we're not going to provide any more data at this time. I think in terms of the mortgage market, we just continue to see the competition to lend to our customers increasing, some of that from the newer entrants. And I think while for a very long period of time we've been quite negative about the mortgage market, I mean, it continues to improve. Is the way we see it at the moment. I think there is real competition chasing a limited number of customers. And as I say, I think with the new entrants coming in, that's increasing. If you look at the, you know, the average cost of a mortgage, if you're using Help to Buy, you know, it still is considerably below the alternative second-hand market, and you know, we continue to see some outstanding rates. So I don't think anything's going to change there. And as you know, we have somebody who spends his whole time working with the lenders, really looking forward, and he seems to be walking around with a bit of a smile on his face at the moment. So I think he's seeing a market which is, you know, continues to be very, very strong in terms of mortgage availability. David, do you want to talk about land?
Yeah, I mean, I think on land, you know, we've said consistently over the last 4 or 5 years that our minimum hurdle on land is 20% gross margin and 25% return on capital, and we've updated every 6 months in terms of our progress, first of all on land intake, and secondly on sites that we've started and finished and how we've performed against those hurdles. Beyond that, we said in September that, you know, we were trying to push up hurdles. We weren't publishing any revision in terms of the minimum hurdles, and it's not our intention to publish any revision in terms of the minimum hurdles. But I think if you looked at our land intake over the last 6 or 8 months compared to the equivalent period in the prior year, we are intaking at slightly higher margins. So I think what that indicates is that the land market, certainly regionally, is still a very, very attractive market for the house builders. And in London and the South East, again, we've said that we're tending to try to focus on larger, slightly more complex sites, and also continuing to focus on government land where we have a good track record of securing government sites, which tend to be probably larger than average, and we see that as being an attractive part of our land pipeline.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
We'll take our next question from Andy Murphy in Bank of America.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I've got a few here. Just on the land purchases, you're signalling 16,000 units for this year. Is that sort of the level you think you'll be running at going forward? In other words, if you're sort of targeting that sort of level and the sort of the land bank level that you've talked about, does that therefore mean that the 16,000 target for volumes going forward is likely to remain in place despite the fact that you're guiding up today? Secondly, on the legacy land, just wondering if you could give us a flavour for the types of properties that you're putting on there. Is that more sort of social housing or perhaps you could give us a little bit of colour, because the profit contribution was obviously quite low from those, perhaps not surprisingly. And then just in terms of the average site numbers for this year and next year, could you give us a flavour of what sort of level of growth you think is possible? Thank you.
Okay. I mean, I'll just start with the legacy land point. I think, as you know, when we replanned these older sites out, we took an awful lot of the apartments off. So I think it's conventional, relatively low-cost family housing that we're building on these sites. I think the key feature is low average selling price, because these are sites which are, you know, in less good locations, so the ASPs are lower. And as you remember, these are the ones where the margin was compressed, and in some cases the margin was reduced to zero. So that's where we're pulling extra units. These are established sites, long running sites, and what we've effectively said is, look, if we can get a faster sales rate, you know, the production side of things is well under control. Let's get more volumes off now, because that does obviously turn the land value into cash, and improve the outlook for margins going forward, because we reduce the drag of the old site. So I think that's the logic there. I mean, in terms of land purchases, it's a relatively simple equation. We're pretty much wedded to the 4.5 year land bank. What we're really talking about now is making sure that we're covering what we need to replace the units we're using in a year, plus a small increment to cover whatever step up we think we need for the following year. But I think the big shift is much more substantial. It's the focus on strategic. So we've given the numbers for the year to date, nearly 10,000 plots secured through option arrangements, and our intent is to continue to do that. So what we're doing is we're not pushing out the land bank size for the future. We're trying to secure more of it now through options, so we've got that security of land supply going out further. So what you can see is I think the 4.5-year guidance is unlikely to change materially, but actually what we're seeing is more coming through the strategic land pipeline where we've been particularly successful. And I think the MPPF obviously has helped with that. So, you know, that has really triggered this fairly material change in terms of where we source our longer-term land from. Do you want to give any guidance on average sites, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, Andy, just in terms of the sort of background on the average site numbers, so, I mean, we have site numbers including and excluding joint ventures. I think it's probably easier to look at the numbers excluding joint ventures because we're guiding on the joint venture profits separately.
Yeah.
So just in terms of the sort of background, I mean, FY14, we were at around 365 in terms of site numbers. For FY15, in terms of where we are now, we'll probably be about 380 to 385 in terms of average site numbers for the year. And in line with what I said previously, you know, we see that moving volumes up by 3 to 5% in terms of that controlled volume growth is achievable, and therefore we'd expect site numbers to move up in line with that. So nothing major in terms of site numbers, but clearly average site numbers stepping up from around 380 to 385 this year to a higher number for FY16.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And we'll take our next question from Will Jones in Redburn. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple if I could, please. Just coming back on the strategic land side of things, the nearly 10,000 plots you've added so far this year, could you give us a number of sites that have come with that and perhaps the comparable number to the 10,000 in FY14? And maybe it updates us as well on where you are with the pull-throughs from the strategic land bank back into owner control, please, for this current year. And then the second one was just more of a technical one, really, that the ASP in the order book, the private ASP in the order book, looks like it's kind of flattish now year over year, despite the fact the P&L clearly is still moving upwards. Is that just a London mix effect in terms of what's in the order book this year versus last? And I guess while we're on that topic, perhaps you can just give us an update, please. It hasn't been asked on the London market itself in, you know, calendar 15 today. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to start with the London market, just to give you some colour on that, and then I think, David, if you can handle the others, but I suspect there's a limit to how much information you want to put out at this time. I think the London market is pretty predictable, and we are seeing very, very strong performances from every part of London other than the, you know, the very, very central areas, Zone 1 and 2, which you know, we've said before, it's a very small part of our business, but no doubt it's affected by what's going on internationally. We still expect to get close to 2,000 units out of our London business this year, which, if you remember, is our sort of peak output we've described before. So that's a very, very strong performance. And if we look at the sites that are operating, the Catfords, the Deptfords and Greenwiches, I mean, these sites are performing incredibly well at the moment. And there's a good number of those new sites coming through in similar parts of London. So, you know, we're very optimistic. I think at the very top end, you know, clearly the international situation has had an effect on the number of buyers that are out there. You know, whether the election result will have any material effect, it's just too early to tell. But I'm sure it's helpful that there's no mansion tax and no further sanctions against non-DOMs. But as I say, it's such a small part of our business. I mean, the one site that we have in Westminster, which we tend to focus on, is selling quite nicely at a reasonable sales rate at the moment. So there are still buyers out there. I just think there are less buyers than there were previously. But we'll have to see how that performs, I think, over the summer period and see whether the election result really has any effect on that.
Great, thanks. And sorry, just as a follow-up, the 2,000 or so completions, are you replacing those in the land market at around a one-times rate in this year, or might it be less than that? Thanks.
I mean, you know, the London business is really quite lumpy, but the intention is to try and hold it at that sort of output. David's also already talked about the numbers coming through from JVs over the next couple of years. That's obviously helping us. We've got three new sites to launch in the next few months. I think it's another 650 units on those sites. So, I think there's a reasonable pipeline of sites coming through, but the next couple of years probably we'll see more coming out of JVs than not. Intention, though, is to try and get to that sort of output level over the future.
Okay, thank you.
Strategic land, David?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of strategic land, so we've published some numbers previously, and we'll update the numbers obviously in September, but you're looking at average site sizes that are in the order of 250 to 300 plots. So larger than our operational intake. You know, our operational intake is probably sitting at around about 130 plots per site on average. But bear in mind that a number of these strategic sites can be split in terms of Barratt and David Wilson, and therefore the site size will reduce as we bring them into the operational land bank. In terms of the 9,900, I mean, I think it's a difficult thing to look at on a year-on-year basis. I mean, the intake year-on-year is down, so we were substantially above 9,900 in the prior year. There was a couple of larger sites in the prior year numbers, but nonetheless, I think you've really got to look at this stage at strategic on a cumulative basis, because we are also building our capability on strategic, and we're very confident in terms of our target for FY17 with 20% of our completions coming from strategic land in FY17. In terms of the ASP, I mean, generally on ASP, there clearly is mixed impacts, and there can be substantial mixed impacts in relation to London. So I think we would guide on ASP that if you look at the ASP in the owned land bank that we published in February for December 14, we were at around 238,000. Affordable ASP is not going to move a great deal, and therefore I think that the overall ASP, that land bank ASP at 238 is good guidance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Olivia Peters in RBC.
Morning, guys. Just a couple, please, from me. Going back to what you were saying around production efficiencies and the use of timber frames and things like that, I was just wondering what proportion of your completions, use those efficiencies, as it were, and where could it go to? And then on average selling prices, obviously, if you exclude London, are you seeing any major discrepancies in terms of the trends in, say, the north and the south? If you could split those out, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. On production efficiencies, I mean, this is not something that's going to change rapidly overnight. I think it's something that's going to change over the next 5 years. We have set out to increase our use of what we describe as off-site manufactured components to around 20% over the next few years. One of the easiest things to do is to use timber frame kits, which you know we use in Scotland already, as does every other house builder, but we're now using timber frame pretty much across the country because it gives us speed of build. And as I said earlier, one of the problems we all have is that, how do we build faster to meet the market we're in at the moment? So we're certainly upping the use of timber frame kits. We have a deal with Stuart Mill, which I think has worked very well. They're a great partner to have, and we're working with them to see how we can increase and utilize their products going forward. The other things that we are big on are things like smart roofs, which can be manufactured off-site. There are a number of different solutions there. But a lot of the componentry to houses can now be bought as kits. So we're looking at pods for our London business, where effectively the internal fittings are all done off-site and then brought onto site. This is something that will build, I think, over the next few years. But we have a small team inside our technical group who are focused just on this, led by an ex-BRE guy that we brought across. And we're seeing some real benefits of that. And I think this is the, you know, it's one of the ways of dealing with the issue of rising labour costs. It's one of the ways of dealing with whatever environmental standards that we need. And it's certainly a way of building homes more quickly and making sure we get the quality as good as we want it to be. So for all those good reasons, we see it as financially sensible to be moving that way at a sensible pace. But it's not a revolution. You know, it's an evolution from where we've been.
Thank you, great. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think on ASP, I mean, the short answer is no. I don't think we're seeing anything that's, unusual in relation to regional trends. But clearly, we continue to see different trends throughout the country. So I would say as a generalisation, there's been some slowing in terms of underlying inflation in relation to London and the South East. And we've seen stronger trends in the regional markets, whether it be in the most recent trading period or over the last 6 months. A general direction of travel is still that we are building more houses, more large family houses, and therefore we're seeing movements in terms of mix in relation to average square footage. We outlined in February some of the trends that we'd seen in terms of average square footage, and while that will level over the next couple of years, and we are still seeing some upward trends in terms of average square footage, which is clearly driving higher selling prices on a per unit basis prior to taking account of any underlying inflation.
Great, thank you guys.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. And we'll take our next question from Kevin Kamak in Senkos. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark. Morning, David.
Hi, Kevin.
Just two questions from me. It's sort of, I suppose they're slightly picky ones, really, but I'm quite interested. You've obviously given a very clear indication of the incremental profitability from the additional 250, essentially off the legacy sites in your owned companies, but I'm just could one say the same thing about the JVs? Because essentially, well, in fact, in relative terms, there's an even bigger increase percentage-wise in the completions that you appear to be getting this year than originally guided. And although, I'm not sure if officially whether you gave a guidance on profitability, but the increase, looking at my estimates, which are probably wrong, but doesn't appear to be more than a couple of million, even though there's been a fairly substantial increase in the sort of top line JV numbers. I just wondered if there was any, perhaps I'm completely wrong, or is there equally something which has suppressed the level of incremental profit there? That's the first thing. And secondly, I'm sort of hoping the answer is simply the time of year, i.e. you're capturing the period coming up to budgets. But is there a natural explanation for why the growth in the affordable order book has been significantly greater than that in the PD?
I mean, I think on the second, I'll let David answer the first. I think on the second, I mean, affordable is very, very lumpy. The bottom line is that we are obviously on a hell of a roll in terms of opening new sites. If you look at that site number increase year on year, it's a big, big step up. We're going to be close to 180 new sites this year. When we open those new sites, we tend to contract the affordable right up front. Sometimes it's in phases if it's a very large site, but normally there is an upfront order that comes with those new sites. And obviously the sites that are running off, I mean, we've already taken those. So it's simply around the timing and the growth in outlets that's just driving that that forward order. So, you know, there is a finite limit to how far it can go. But you're right, we're probably at a high at this point in the cycle. David, on the
thanks.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, in terms of the joint ventures, I mean, we've moved the joint venture guidance from 40 million to 45 million. And we've moved the unit guidance from 700 to 850. I mean, just two points, really. One is that clearly the joint ventures, we've disclosed all the activities in the joint ventures. There's a number of different sites. There's a number of different profit levels in terms of percentages and absolute levels of profit, because some of them are London sites that are legacy. Some of them are new London sites and some of them are out of London. So I think there is a mix impact there. And secondly, something that I think mutes it slightly is that the joint venture number is post-interest and post-taxation. That's the way the joint venture number is disclosed. So that does mute it slightly in terms of the profit improvement.
Okay. So in fact, what you're saying is potentially some of the additional volumes through JVs would themselves have been off what you were referring to as legacy sites anyway.
Correct. And certainly differential margin. And then, as I say, you've got this muting impact in terms of interest and tax.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. There's currently no more questions in the queue.
Okay, right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for dialing in and for your questions. I think you can probably tell that we've seen a very strong trading period for the second half. That gives us real confidence in terms of where we're going to come out in FY15. But I think more importantly, and certainly for David, a great start to FY16. I think we will be in a good position in terms, we already are in a good position in terms of planning, probably the best position we've been in since the downturn. I think the political situation, you know, is a good result for house builders and for our customers, and I think that's going to give us a clear opportunity to deliver over the next few years. And the forward sales position, which of course is at a peak today, but we expect to be at sort of 25% at the end of June, which is, again, somewhere we haven't been for a long, long time. It takes a massive amount of pressure off the off future performance if we come in with a strong forward order position. So I think the performance is good and the business is in great shape. So thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.